Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt. We're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:27, coming up on 8:28. I'm Mike Derler, and joining me on the phone right now, for our usual interesting, I think, Tuesday conversation, is Paul Gissing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Hey there, Mike.
I tell you what, how's everything up in Albuquerque right now?
Well, we've had a lot of rain recently, and that's all good for fire season and cool temps, relatively speaking, for this time in May. And We're going to dry out and get a little warmer, but I still don't see any 90s on the horizon, let alone hundreds. So hopefully, we have a nice, pleasant Memorial Day weekend and get started with the summer.
There you go. Well, I don't got any hundreds coming, but I got plenty of 90s coming down here in Alamogordo. But that's okay. You're just a few miles north of me. You should be a little bit cooler. There you go. Well, Paul, a lot of things just constantly keep happening, and the governor recently spoke to Politico on energy, and of course she didn't actually get it all right.
Well, if there's a theme to today's conversation, it's the governor and her lack of interest or knowledge, and you don't know which, because she certainly, as a politician, is interested in saying things that sometimes aren't necessarily true. But she also is not maybe the most up-to-speed person when it comes to what's actually happening around the world and in various areas that she wants to talk about. So Politico is a political journal up in Washington, D.C. They recently had an energy forum, and the governor spoke for about 15 or so, 20 minutes about various energy issues. And I was watching this thing myself because there were some other reports about it. And, you don't always get very often at all get recorded remarks from the governor. You frequently are just reading the stories or watching a couple clips that come on the evening news. She speaks to a fair number of groups, and this time I had the opportunity to really look at what she was saying. And as it turns out, the governor's not very good about telling the truth. So here's a quick rundown, and I actually timestamped these at errorsofenchantment.com, so folks can go read them themselves, and they can also watch her entire speech with a link I put up there. She starts out by claiming that New Mexico is one of the only states that's moving out of poverty. A May 3rd, 2023 Farmington Daily Times article notes New Mexico again had the third highest poverty rate in the United States in 2021, the most recent data available, and that the state's ranking has changed little over several years. Later on, she claims that New Mexico is the largest wind farm in North America, but I could find no information to that effect in a January 2023 list of the top five wind farms in the United States, let alone North America, did not include a single New Mexico wind farm. A March 23rd article, a separate one, states that Roscoe Wind Farm near Dallas is the largest. The governor claims she vetoed incentives for electric vehicles and other green priorities because they were too small, which we've talked about that a little bit. We agree with her, but her environmentalist allies wanted her very much to keep them in the bill and have criticized her vociferously. I don't really still to this day understand what the governor did with the vetoes of the tax bill from this last session, but it's quite amusing and to watch this infighting among Democrats and Democrat interest groups. The governor claimed that your home state of Kansas and Missouri as well went to three-day school weeks due to budgetary issues. Some cities and districts have gone to four-day school weeks in those two states, And actually, it's becoming increasingly popular as, according to a news report, students have had 25 more instructional hours than before in the school year, and they've had better luck with attendance as well, and cost savings for the school district. So maybe something to consider here in New Mexico, but yeah. Nobody's going to three-day school week.
No.
Let's see here. She's claimed to have passed and signed the largest tax cuts in the history of New Mexico. Now, Bill Richardson would like a word. His 2003 tax reductions were maybe smaller in nominal terms, but once you adjust them for inflation, Bill Richardson's tax cuts were larger. The moderator said directly to Lujan Grisham, your state is not on track to meet its green energy goals, and then the governor went into stuff about free college, and I'm producing workers in the renewable energy sector. And then finally, the governor says, and I quote, New Mexico was framed, and in fact, I do disagree with that frame as an energy state and a leader in energy. She is making the direct point that New Mexico is not a energy state or an energy leader state. Well, that's news to the legislature and everybody in the state who works in that industry, and the fact that we're second in oil production, one of the top 10 in natural gas, not to mention all the greeny-weeny wind and solar that the governor likes. And then historically, of course, nuclear and a variety of other energy technologies that have been pioneered here in New Mexico. So it's quite a whopper-filled speech. I know the governor doesn't have to run for re-election, at least to governor again, but boy, her relationship with the truth is like a distant, distant cousin.
Oh boy, there's no doubt about that. And regarding AR-15s, no one she made this comment.
America, who isn't in one of those two situations should own an automatic weapon. There is no reason to own one of those.
And that leads up to our next one. Governor falsely claims that an AR-15 is an automatic weapon. Also in that bit there that I didn't get the whole thing there, she also claimed that no one should own a military-grade weapon. Well, an AR-15 is not a military-grade weapon, and an AR-15 is not an automatic weapon.
Yeah, no, you got it. And again, you question whether this is just pure ignorance on the governor's part, or if she's got some specific malintent. We know that she doesn't like guns. We know that she would love to come after your gun, everybody's gun in New Mexico. The term AR-15 does not mean assault rifle, though, and I presume that's what she's getting, where she's getting that term from, but it's not an automatic weapon, and it stands for Armalite rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gun that's been around since, I think, the 1950s or 60s. So, yeah, 1950s. Mm-hmm. This was one Google search away from her fingertips, and it just shows you how politicians, whether they are flat out lying or just don't care about the truth. Even basic facts that are easily discoverable through a search that took me less than a minute, they don't seem to care. Whatever fits the narrative, whatever fits their agenda, that's what they go with. And I'm not saying that Lujan Grisham is especially bad when it comes to her grasp on the truth. I think she's right in line with a lot of politicians, especially on the far left side of the aisle these days.
Well, when it comes to those topics, whatever they can say, whatever they can do, whatever they can convince you of, doesn't matter if it's fact or not. I mean, I think there's even a clip of our president saying, we don't believe in facts, we believe in the truth. You know, and it's like, well, hold on there, Sparky. You know, so some things there that are really confusing with that. Well, let's go from guns and let's go to gas stoves. Two really dangerous things, according to that side of the aisle. A California city has banned gas stoves but has exempted a celebrity chef and his new restaurant from the ban. Now, that's what you call selective reasoning.
Yeah, and I think everybody in America who had an ounce of critical thinking knew that, you know, before COVID, there were certain favorable treatments for powerful special interest groups and individuals. But I don't think people realized how bad that could get and how much that could impact their individual lives. Now, government, of course, continues to be more intrusive in our day-to-day lives. COVID was a great wake-up call as just how intrusive it can be. And we saw, of course, politicians hobnobbing in restaurants and hanging out, whether it's the governor making a jewelry run or Gavin Newsom hanging out at the French Laundry. But the same is, I think, part of the strategy when it comes to these gas stoves. And we've talked a lot about this. Well, it keeps coming up. And California's Palo Alto, that's where Stanford is, no less, has a gas stove ban in place. And a celebrity chef named Jose Andres threatened to take his restaurant called Zaytinya elsewhere. And because he said, and that's the funny thing, only natural gas appliances would grant him the ability to achieve its signature complex flavors. So, you know, you've got a chef who's one of the apparently top chefs in the entire country explicitly making the case for gas stoves. So what do you think Palo Alto did? Do you think they got rid of the entire ban because they said, oh, this is a mistake, we're going to do what's right by other chefs who are of low profile, lower profile, and, you know, people who don't have restaurants that they're cooking at? Of course not. They just exempted this one particular individual excuse me, from the ban. So, you know, the gas stoves are another intrusive way for government to control your life, and banning that particular technology would be extremely unfortunate and anti-freedom. And I know California, we talked about a court case at the federal level. I'm wondering, what will that do to this stove ban in California? I would think that it would be illegal, but they may have cities holding out and resisting the court. So we shall see. But that news caught my attention for sure.
No doubt about that, yeah. Well, Paul, we saw something happen with universities back when they started making student loans. And universities started charging more for college, started building bigger plants, bigger schools, and started paying more in salaries of professors and administrators. Well, now we have the UNM budget explodes, thanks in part to free college, because we're seeing the same thing going on with that. The money is flowing into colleges through these kids and through the state, and we're seeing a similar thing happen that happened back when student loans got started.
Yeah. Well, it's worth noting, first and foremost, that New Mexico has always been a very generous funder of higher education.
Mm-hmm.
We have one of the biggest budgets, and I'll talk about that in a second, when it comes to higher education. But UNM, of course, is the flagship institution of New Mexico. Aggies don't have to kick their heels and be upset about it. I think, quite frankly, New Mexico State's the better of the two institutions overall, but UNM is the one that is identified as the flagship. And at main campus, their budget topped for the first time $1 billion. That's just main campus here in Albuquerque. The consolidated budget, including the entire health system, also jumped 9.2% from the year before and is $4.1 billion. So these are rapidly growing budgets. Of course, free college is a big part of that. It's also notable that we have tuition going up, inflation going up, pay to educators and all kinds of other people working for these institutions going up. So there's a lot of different reasons why this budget is exploding, but it is worth noting that according to, let's see, the data I have is from 2021, and it shows that New Mexico has the seventh highest spending on higher education as a state. Hawaii, Alaska, Wyoming, Illinois, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Mexico. So we are one of the very biggest spending states in the entire country. And that's in 2021. That's before the new free at college and some of this additional spending took place. So I'm sure once we get into the 2022 data and 2023 data, we will see even more upticks in terms of higher education spending. That data is from the National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics. So they said New Mexico taxpayers spent $11,564 per full-time student. So, yeah, we're just getting started with this higher education spending spree. I question, you know, the political leadership of New Mexico and the taxpayers of the state as to what they feel like they're really getting for this deal in terms of, you know, economic benefits for the state, jobs, and, you know, growth in the state economy. It doesn't seem like we're getting a whole lot out of the deal, but that's a decision our politicians have made and continue to make over the years. More money for higher education.
Yeah, and what are they getting? Unfortunately, what are they getting for that education is a real concern with a lot of folks. So, well, I tell you what, the woman does have a way to upset people. So the governor alcohol vetoes angers the left. I mean, is this a plan to just see how many people I can make mad by the governor?
I don't know. And, you know, this is one of those things where we're talking about two different aspects of the vetoes. And you and I have discussed a little bit of this, but New Mexico In-Depth, which is kind of one of those journalism with an agenda type outfits, their nonprofit lefty journalism outfit. They've been doing business in New Mexico, so they're one of the deans of the left-wing journalism effort, but they are undoubtedly, you know, coming at it from the left political perspective. But they had a story about the vetoes from the governor. I go into some detail at heirsofenchantment.com. They talked to some legislative sponsors of the higher taxes on alcohol during the session. Antoinette Cedillo Lopez, a Democrat from Albuquerque, Joanne Ferrari, a Democrat from Las Cruces. And I make note that Rio Grande Foundation is opposed to increasing alcohol taxes, and we fought against this particular issue during the session. Of course, was put into the final bill, and then the governor vetoed it, and this has caused a great deal of consternation among her traditional left-wing allies. Interestingly enough, something Rio Grande Foundation favored that further upset some of these legislators, and they really only talked to Democrats in the article, but I would think Republicans would have concerns about it as well, is New Mexico tends to do a pretty poor job of allocating taxes, directing them for what they should be directed to. And, you know, conservatives have made the point for years that, you know, automobile fees and gas taxes should be dedicated 100% to the roads, not just transportation, but to the roads. And in the same way, taxes on alcohol should be directed to pay for alcohol treatment programs and other needs when it comes to alcohol abuse. That is currently not the situation, and the governor could have signed the bill that would have done that, but she took that out as well. And that one just seems flat out senseless, that she did not go along with the idea of directing, earmarking alcohol taxes to alcohol treatment and abuse. But she didn't do it and vetoed that particular provision and upset a lot of the left-wing allies that she, you know, has. So, yeah, when we see this next 30-day session roll around, I think it's safe to say that Lujan Grisham is going to be weakened somewhat, unless she manages to pull off a job with the Biden administration or decides to leave entirely. But we don't know that. What we know is that this governor's made some pretty obvious missteps, not just things that we don't like as conservatives, but things that the left doesn't like as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is her last term as governor, and she's likely to go back to Washington in one capacity or the other, maybe even running for Senator Heinrich's seat, because Senator Heinrich is thinking about coming back and being governor of New Mexico. These people just go back and forth, don't they?
Yeah, that seems to be the problem or plan, but, you know, that's just the way it is in a blue state where you have a limited number of people with the fundraising capacity and the political name that they can kind of trade those seats back and forth, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, now we'll see what happens. Hey, one of the things we talked about is this energy problem with the Palo Alto, or not the Palo Alto, but the San Juan generating station, the coal-fired generation station being shut down. So how's this going to help us? California wet winter, spring could save the West from blackouts.
Well, if you're like me and kind of a weather nerd, you've probably seen the pictures coming from parts of the Sierra Nevada and even Los Angeles. Not so much snow in Los Angeles, but they've had an epic winter when it comes to the amount of moisture that falls in California. And, you know, it's always worth remembering California is home to one out of every eight Americans or thereabouts. And California, you know, the forgotten form of green energy, and it is controversial in California, but there's a lot of environmentalists, so-called, that would like to get rid of some of the dams that they have on some of these rivers. You know, they have a lot more precipitation up in those mountains, and they have some pretty fierce-flowing rivers that are useful for hydroelectric. And, you know, you're changing the river, and there's environmental impact to that, but you're talking a lot of clean energy coming out of those hydroelectric dams. Well, how does this all connect? Well, we're on the same western grid as California is. Here in New Mexico, we're an afterthought relative to them because California is going to get the power that they need in many of these cases where there's a shortage across the grid. Mostly they've had localized California shortages in the past, but the fact that they have hydroelectric power aplenty from that runoff, and we're talking about a significant portion of their power, approximately, you're looking at about, 10-15% of all of their electricity in California in typical times comes from hydropower. So when you got water flowing through those dams, you have a lot more pressure put on those turbines, and that means you have more electricity being generated. So, there's no guarantees in this life. We've talked about the prospects of problems facing New Mexico due to the Energy Transition Act that the governor passed through and then paused at the beginning of last summer about this time of year, and managed to get through her reelection bid without any blackouts or brownouts, thanks to the San Juan Generating Station. Well, now we may be getting a little bit lucky again, thanks to all of the snow and rain that's fallen throughout California and really boosting those hydroelectric figures and keeping California in a good position, which only makes New Mexico gets us into a better position. So, again, we could have same problems we talked about with regard to a lack of electricity availability here in the state of New Mexico, but especially given the relatively cool temperatures that we've had so far, with just a little bit of time to go before June kicks off, and that's when the heat really normally comes in not just 90s, but hundreds here in Albuquerque, things are looking pretty good for the summer. Again, things can change.
Absolutely, and we'll just have to see how it goes. But one thing is for sure, we do not have the San Juan Generating Station now. So,
correct.
Right, yeah. Well, one more thing, and I love this next thing we're going to talk about, because everything the Democrats says proves that what they did was wrong. And let me read this. As the battle continues to wage in Washington over the raising of the debt ceiling, Democrats have claimed that Trump's cuts are causing the budget shortfall, when the reality is those revenues after Trump's tax cuts, revenues rose. Now, from my first statement. So evidently, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Inflation Reduction Bill that caused all that money to go out didn't work. That's what this is saying to me.
Yeah, well, that Inflation Reduction Act, there's very rarely been a piece of legislation that was so dishonestly titled as the Inflation Reduction Act. Possibly the Patriot Act back during the George W. Bush administration would rival it. But, I'm going to read a tweet from Martin Heinrich. He is kind of par for the course on the Democrat side of the aisle, not just in Washington, but our governor and others. If Republicans are worried about our national debt, they shouldn't be trying to extend the Trump tax cuts for the wealthiest of the wealthy. As Daily Signal noted, this is when the 2017 tax cuts were implemented. So looking at federal revenue coming in, the CBO estimated in 2017 before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, $40.7 trillion. In revenue from the income, payroll, and corporate taxes. After the Tax Cut and Jobs Act passed, $39.6 trillion, so a reduction of about $1 trillion. And then once they actually saw how much money came in, $41.3 trillion. So the revenues went up after the Trump tax cuts, and that's kind of that dynamic approach, the Arthur Laffer approach to taxation, is that if you're hitting the sweet spot when it comes to the taxes you're imposing as a government, you should be maximizing revenues and economic activity to a pretty good extent. What we tend to see in Washington is that taxes are too high, and so you lose some revenue to the government and you kill economic growth. The whole idea of the Laffer curve is to maximize both of those things, because zero tax rates means that you have no economic, or you're not taxing anything. You have unfettered economic activity, which is good for the market, but not for the government. And then 100% tax is good for nobody, because nobody's going to do anything with 100% tax burden. So the sweet spot somewhere in between. And it certainly looks like the federal government's tax policies are too aggressive, too high of a tax burden. And Trump peeled back on some of that, and we've seen some revenue growth. So it's not the tax cuts under Trump that have caused this economic difficulty hitting the budget. The debt ceiling in Washington, the debt ceiling debate continues. It's clearly spending. Spending is the problem facing Washington, D.C., facing our country. And for once, if Heinrich or the Democrats wanted to say we overspent during the Trump administration and Trump was culpable for that, we've overspent during the Biden administration, and heck, we overspent during the Obama and other administrations, that would be an honest statement. But to lay the budgetary situation in the United States at the Trump tax cuts is simply not an accurate statement.
It's actually an insane statement in my book. So, well, Paul, coming up, looks like this Thursday we're going to be running episode 505, Jody Hendricks, New Mexico Family Action Movement. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, as you, I'm sure, are aware, there is a referendum being undertaken, not a referendum, but I only say referendum because then you get into, there are referenda on the ballots, and I just don't feel like quibbling over the referenda kind of thing. But a referendum is when citizens don't like something their elected officials have done. In this case, there are six different bills being put forth for referendum. The folks doing this, including Jody's group, but you know, I've been collecting some signatures as well, and support very much what they're doing. These are not as much core RGF issues. The two issues being collected on the referendum are a handful of what I would call transgender and abortion liberalization measures, including real potential of transgendering and aborting child's babies in schools, in New Mexico schools, which is really troubling and outrageous. So there's four different proposals or proposed referendums on that issue. And then the other two have to deal with the kind of liberalized voting rules and lacking accountability or imposing less accountability over the voting system in a variety of ways. We talked about HB 4 during the session, about the drop boxes, about allowing felons to vote earlier, and just basically undermining the permanent absentee voter list. Just undermining the integrity of our voting system. So Jody and I go through the process, what it looks like, the challenges that we face, especially with a hostile, implacably hostile Secretary of State. You know that Maggie Flus-Oliver buys into all the progressive gibbelins. Mm-hmm. She is very much on the political left and supports everything happening on these issues and is going to be loath to give a referendum, put that on the ballot. But we talk about the referendum and the process, and it's a very timely and worthwhile conversation.
Paul, do you ever think New Mexico will ever get away from the point that they're basically just a Democrat audition for federal government?
Boy, now you're really talking about tough issues. I'm not sure that kind of fundamental change will happen until there are either one of two things happen. And one thing that could happen is that something positive happens where, the oil and gas industry, we always talk about the impact of that, and that's a conservative industry. But the fact is that you don't have a ton of employees coming in for the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. And so their numbers are swamped by the amount of progressives that we have in this state. What we need is on one hand, a industry that has similar impacts economically, but also has a larger employee base. And so those conservative-minded employees come to the state of New Mexico. That's one path. The other path would be that we do have a fundamental shift in this country away from traditional oil and gas, and that somehow that kind of hard times collapse even creates incentives for the politicians to change directions and change, that the people realize, holy cow, what we've been doing for the last 90, 100 plus years isn't working. So those are the paths I see for shifting away from what you're talking about there, Mike. But boy, that's a question that I simply don't have the answer to, whether that'll happen and when.
Yeah, well, that definitely was a loaded question, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, I tell you what, another great conversation. We'll look forward to talking to you again next Tuesday. Can't wait to see what we get into on that one. So till then, have yourself a great week up there. And folks, tune in this Thursday night for episode 505 with Jody Hendricks, New Mexico's Family Action Movement, a referendum project. That'll be on Tipping Point, New Mexico. Paul, thank you again. Have yourself a great one up there, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Mike. Take care.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.